Recording? All right. 3, 2, 1. You are an honest and honorable man, Lord Eddard. Oft times I forget that. I've met so few of them in my life. When I see what honesty and honor have won you, I understand why. Welcome to the White Wolf Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Chimps and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to keep the same in the second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitewolfpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Function by Spinners. Back to episode 297 of White Book. 297! Can you believe it, listeners?
That's shy of 300.
Yeah.
Except none of the listeners are here to be like, nah, man, I really can't.
You listen sometimes, right?
If I'm not on the episode.
See?
I'm here, Will.
Thank you.
Wait a minute. Wait, who are these people?
What are these strange voices?
Oh, is that our...
Was that you?
We're so good at
this. We missed rehearsal.
That segue thing. I'm Sean.
Segui.
And you may have heard me before on the good old White Book here. I think it was, it was somewhere back in the early 200s. We did a Melee episode, and I was on that, pretending like I know things. And as well, you might also know me from a little Lord of the Rings podcast called Cardboard of the Rings. And because I'm a masochist, I also do an Arkham podcast called Mythos Busters.
Wow. Three podcasts. Sort of.
At the moment.
He doesn't get to count this one.
That's
not
true.
I'm going to count it, though.
You are the Shay of podcasts.
Ooh.
I'll take it.
Will you?
Literally.
So which one of us is
giant and Lannister?
Well, I was going to say, you act like you love all of them, but in reality, you just sleep with their dad.
Oh. Whoa. Do I even want to know who that is? Is that magic? I don't know.
Maybe he does.
Do you play magic?
I like this conversation because you can tell we're losing it, but we don't want to just be like, okay, well, moving on.
Well, there we go. And Brian, always willing to point out that the Emperor has no pants. Or
that's
clothes,
my single duty in this world, actually. So, this is Brian. I am also of Cardboard of the Rings, a small, little-known podcast about the Lord of the Rings, the card game, a living card game by Fantasy Flight Games.
Which?
I don't know. That's not my trademark. That's somebody else's. I'm not going to be stealing that kind of content. I have never been on the White Book, which is actually quite infuriating for me. So thanks a lot for that, guys.
You're welcome.
That wasn't a real thank you.
Oh.
It's fine.
Whoops.
Let's move on before we lose the metaphor again.
Yeah. Okay. So
let's redefine the word metaphor here.
I think listeners can already tell this episode is going to be an ever increasing death spiral of a shit show. But as we go, I'm a little curious because some listeners may not remember from Sean's other appearance many episodes ago, and obviously, since this is the first time we've let Brian on the show, and I'm already questioning that decision, you probably don't know how they got into the game.
So, how did you guys kind of make a jump from Lord of the Rings to Game of Thrones involvement?
I'll start there because I imagine my story is simpler in that literally at Gen Con 2 years ago, right? When did they release second edition? It's been 2 years now, right?
2015?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah,
they released it at Gen Con, yes?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I had really no interest in playing the game, primarily due to the fact that my understanding of the game's meta was that it is a very competitive environment. One of the reasons I picked up Lord of the Rings in the first place was the co-op nature of the game. I wasn't really interested in picking up a deck builder where I was going to have to face off against other people who are infinitely better at building decks than I am. But I had, at the time, I believe I had started reading the novels a little bit, but I don't think I had dabbled into the television show yet. And so we jumped in for a little bit, because I remember one of my things was I was worried about spoilers when Sean and Brandon made me sit down and play that. I was like, what if something gets spoiled for me? And we were fairly confident that wasn't going to happen. I think I'd gotten through
book two. And then Brandon was like, oh, don't worry about it. That part where Danny's dragon eats her is not in the game.
Yeah. But so they forced me to sit down and play, and it was definitely a unique experience. I'd never played a game quite like that. So, but I was pretty hooked right away. I was greatly enthralled by the theme. I very much enjoyed the simplicity of you throw down some characters, you throw down some locations. Generally speaking, you know, we were only in the core set at that time, but board state just wasn't getting that complicated. So at the time, but yeah, it really sunk its claws into me. I had no experience with first edition, so I had nothing to compare it to, which is probably a beneficial thing based on what I've heard from a lot of people. And, yeah, here I am. I've got, I think I run out and grab the cards as soon as I know they're out. Definitely don't get into it quite as much as I know a lot of other people do. I think Sean can run circles around me when it comes to deck building, but I am enjoying the process of it. And yeah, I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Turns out, okay. running in a specific direction is really important too. I just kind of tire myself out.
That's fair. That is, you do tend to do that.
Pure jankery.
Well, two important questions for you then, Brian. One, you know, just for our listener base. So you'd say, you know, Melee was what really, really cemented the game for you?
I am not so... what do I want to say? I'm not firmly in either camp, actually. I believe that both present a really enjoyable experience for me. Melee is really fun because I am very good at manipulating people. And I get
no, you're
to
not
shh. Already okay. Proven.
It's my turn. I have a lot of fun. So as we were discussing a little bit before we hit record here, one of my favorite things to do is I sometimes forget how to play the game when I haven't picked it up in, you know, a couple weeks and everything. And I just start with this terrible setup because I don't remember what I'm doing. And then I just make myself look like this weak little lamb in the corner who nobody wants to hurt. And then I swing in on turn three, and we had one game where I got like 12 power in
one turn,
a couple challenges.
Good old Greyjoy.
Greyjoy, I gather.
Just painted this huge target on my face. And
what's remarkable is that strategy's worked more than once.
That's what I don't understand. These guys keep letting me get away with it. But I really like the dirty, you know, the treaties that people make and the betrayals. Sean will not agree with this, but I really do try when I make an agreement with someone, a treaty, I really try hard not to break it because I want people to trust me.
That is false.
But I just fail. It's really what happens.
I think everybody on the podcast would agree that, like, I mean, Melee is only fun if everybody at the table is trying to win.
Yeah, absolutely.
So sometimes in a tournament setting that can get kind of screwed up, but
But getting back to it, I think I really enjoy the idea of what Melee is. I love the roles that come into play. But from the actual strategy point of the game, I really do enjoy Joust. Mostly just from the standpoint of I find it far easier to build a deck for Joust. I don't get so overwhelmed looking at the board state in Joust, which is, I mean, obviously it's much easier to keep track of. So for me, Joust is the superior strategy experience. But Melee is the superior game experience. So it's really just about which one I'm looking to enjoy that particular opportunity.
Okay. And question two, have you caught up on the books and or show by now?
I am completely caught up on the show. I got through book three, and I loved, loved, loved the first book. The second book was a bit of a drag. Loved the third book. And then I have tried to start the fourth book like
five times.
And then
you hit the wall.
I just can't do it. And
Feast and Dance are horrible.
It's
There's some good flavor in Dance.
Feast and Dance are horrible.
Dude, both of those books are terrible.
Oh, boy. I've been told that...
Luke has a real grunt.
I've been told that the fourth book is, if I'm having this much trouble, is just get online, read a complete synopsis of it, and then skip to five.
Pretty much.
See if five works out for me.
Yeah, there's like one Jamie chapter that's worth reading, and that's basically it.
Okay.
Do you ever have, I don't know, I mean, there's a couple of chapters. Do you ever, since we're in the mode of promoting other podcasts, do you ever do Davos's Fingers? It's a podcast that just reads the books, like, in five chapter increments, and they do chapter summaries and then discuss what's going on at that particular time in the books, and it's spoiler free up until they get to a section that they talk about like fan theories and whatnot, and they let you know beforehand and you can jump off right at that point.
Did they actually read out the full chapter?
No, they write their own chapter summaries and like hit all the high points, and it's always really well produced, and they have a really great rapport. It's highly recommended.
I've
got to listen to this.
Yeah,
shout out to Davos's Fingers, Matt and Scatty. If you listen to this, which I doubt, but shout out to y'all.
Subscribing now.
Yeah,
I got to figure out how they managed to do all that without spoiling things.
Well, they reserve all their spoiler discussion to a section they call Davos After Dark, where... so Matt is a musician, and so he writes a little jingle for every single point of view character that they play, and then he writes the jingle for Davos After Dark, and so they talk about...
This sounds like the best podcast ever.
It's so good. There's a lot of good, Song of Ice and Fire podcasts out there, and that's the one that I really gravitated toward.
Okay.
So, okay. Yeah,
sorry to advertise other podcasts on our podcast.
We never do that. You know, we just normally save it for sections of the show that no one listens to, like props and slop. But whatever.
But I think this is actually a service to the community. Like if you're behind on your lore, or you're not like super up to date, or haven't read it in a while, like I highly recommend doing that.
This would have been great to know right before we do the theme episode.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we let Brian have his time, but we haven't let Sean.
Unimportant.
The story of my life working with Brian.
Dude, Sean has like six podcasts, like why does it matter?
Yeah, that's true. He gets enough of an opportunity to talk about himself.
You know, I think I may have given a brief synopsis last time I was on, so I'll make it somewhat short. The prior Gen Con to second edition releasing, I bought my friend Brandon's old LCG core set in like the first two cycles from him.
Oh, I remember.
It was at
that.
A decent price. It wasn't a big deal. But I was like, a year before that, my friend Evan had bought the core set, had told me about this podcast called Two Champs and a Chump, told me how good it was. And I was like, fuck, podcast.
That was a lie.
Mistake. I went back and listened to that shit before I was on the white book and was like, oh my god. Actually, no, it was awesome.
But, I finally decided to buy in. I fought it for a really long time because I wasn't into Song of Ice and Fire for a long time. The HBO series was one of the first times I had heard of it. And I was like, all right, well, oh, it's not done yet? Like, I read through The Dark Tower, and if I had started The Dark Tower before he finished The Dark Tower, and then he didn't finish The Dark Tower, I would have been heartbroken. So I'm just going to let him finish it. Clearly, I failed. So tried the game out with my buddy Evan. Didn't like it at first, because the first thing I did was like, oh, hey, there's this guy called Jon Snow. And, oh, there's this card called Ghost, and each one refers to the other, so they must go together. And so I played them down, and immediately they get killed the first turn. I'm like, all right, well, I hate this game. I hate this game. So it took me a while to warm up to it. Finally decided to buy in, and then 3 months later at Worlds that year, after Gen Con, they announced second edition. I'm like, all right, well. So when Brian was kind of not sure if he was going to buy in, not really into it, I had the throbbiest nerd boner just waiting.
I don't want to buy a second like that while I'm sitting next to you.
Wow, that may have been graphic. The single most awkward phrase I've ever heard on this show.
Who says throbbiest?
So no, seriously, it was like to the point where I was on, like, I'd have 5 minutes to spare at work. I'd be on the BGG page just looking at the spoiler images, like, oh, Robert, I'm gonna play the shit out of you.
I wish I'd stayed home to record.
Cue hand slapping sounds.
So really got into it. Really enjoyed the core set. I thought it was an amazing core set. It kind of became my go-to competitive game in addition to Lord of the Rings. Love, love, love Melee. I begrudgingly play Joust and have enjoyed the game semi-casually up to this point.
And done.
Nice.
And done.
Man.
This is quite the finale.
Yeah, we front-loaded.
All right.
Wait.
Yeah.
So, like, the dismount was a little strange given
the nature of the story.
Much like the standard experience you'll get.
I think I'm just going to take over for Sean because he's not doing well here. I think this game has actually brought us together as friends quite a bit. Obviously we had, you know, Lord of the Rings.
We never really did, though.
No, that's kind of part of the problem is by the time Sean joined Cardboard of the Rings, I was kind of on my way out with that game. And so we were kind of saddled with this unfortunate situation in that I was the one who kind of got Sean on our podcast, and I didn't really play the game very much anymore. We played it. We got a couple in right away in the beginning, but you guys introducing this game to me was really beneficial. So Sean and I live about a half hour away from each other, and we've been able to meet up many, many times to actually play in person. You know, playing online is great, but this game is just, it's a card game needs to be played with the cards. Yeah. And
especially a symmetrical game where it's like, yeah, I love playing in person. Now, yeah. Sean, I have a question. Is your card recall in Game of Thrones as good as it is for Lord of the Rings?
Oh, God, no.
It's still pretty solid.
It's all right of the cards that I play, but the thing is like comparing this to Lord of the Rings, I can just forget all of the encounter cards, and most of those don't matter except for a few notable ones.
Well, and I would guess, too, that if you weren't trying to keep up with two other games...
Try three. Oh, yeah, two other.
You wouldn't have any other trouble. You wouldn't have any trouble with this one either, but...
I'm okay. I'm okay on this game, but I'm nowhere near the Wunderkind of my normal Lord of the Rings recall.
Okay, well, in that case, tell me you have Thrones DB open and ready for searches for this
sure
next
do.
Segment. Okay, good.
We couldn't be more prepared. Which is also a complete...
I was going to say, that's pretty new.
Yes, yes.
Super new. A brand new strategy to me. I'm kind of uncomfortable with it. I don't know what I'm doing.
I took notes and everything.
Damn.
Right? Wow. I'm bringing my game to you guys.
Damn, I'm gonna tattle
on you,
Brandon.
Have you back more.
Oh, that's fine. I'm sending him an email right now. On the white book, sucker. Eat it. Nope.
We still have to do our crossover the other way too.
Oh, the window for that is closing quickly. But
yeah, that's true.
We'll probably make something happen.
We've got about two or three episodes left.
There'll be a special dispensation made, I'm sure, so that we can all just get really rip-roaring hammered.
Maybe you could join us for the law offices of Sean Bryan and the White Book.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, what was on the last one we did?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. I loved that. That was a blast.
That's one of my top favorite episodes ever.
Better than I expected, honestly.
That's basically our podcast's motto.
We also
better than I expected.
I can see that on a t-shirt.
Will, we have to do that for Thrones, but we also have to do the job interview one because that one
My only demand,
basically, we just need to steal all of their best bits.
Yes. Even though these are all Brandon's ideas, my only demand is if you're going to steal the content, you have to invite us to be on with you.
Yep.
Okay. Fair enough. Deal. Deal.
Hey guys, Will here throwing out a quick prop to the Massacre at Hard Home event in Cleveland, Ohio. That's going to be at the Cleveland Airport Marriott. You can find a link to the event in our events section on the website. It'll send you to the Facebook page with more info. There's a map. There's a bunch of really sweet prizes they've got going on for this Joust event. They're going to be doing a top eight. They're going to be a Road to Stalik event, so the winner here gets a free entry into Stalik, a first round bye, entry into Melee, gets a room at the castle. It doesn't get you airfare there, unfortunately, but they're going to play mats, trophies, all sorts of different swag, beer mugs, free cards, and things if they get enough folks. So hit it up. Looks like it's going to be a really sweet event, I believe. Wasn't sent over to me with this batch of info, but I believe they're also doing some charity fundraising with this particular event. So check out the event, see what's going on, make it happen, and enjoy what I think is actually the first Road to Stalik event to happen in the United States. So with that, we'll carry on with the episode. Conveniently, that's why we have you guys on today. So we are.
It's only been 19 minutes.
Well, we spent half an hour just BSing before we really started. So
I guess
that's
fair.
Okay, so we are blatantly ripping off our, I want to say, sister show, but child show, maybe more accurate. They owe, you know, everything that they are and could have been to us.
I'm leaving it in 2 months. I'll let it slide.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, we're stealing from them with a little segment that wound up being called Thamurdered, or at least the episode was, I believe, right? And it's I think one of Luke and I's favorites, so we're stealing Sean and Brian to import that concept to Game of Thrones. So I mean, you guys were part of that origination, even if it was Brandon's idea originally, it sounds like. So
I came up with the term.
That's true.
It is my lasting legacy to the Lord of the Rings and Cardboard of the Rings, and now you guys.
Yeah, welcome. Now it's popping up everywhere. So how would you define it? Tell our listeners what we're going to be doing.
My general understanding of how it began with Cardboard of the Rings is we simply decided to have a theme-based conversation where we wanted to either challenge or build up the theme that had been utilized in designing the cards. And we had a particular example. I couldn't even tell you what it was, but somebody came up with a card that they thought was a terrible usage and application of theme, and all of us jumped on top of it. Perhaps just one person. I don't quite remember.
It was Etienne.
Etienne
was the original Thamurderer.
Okay, so he defended the card beautifully and probably brought up, knowing him, some obscure reference in the novels that actually pointed out to
why it was Elfstone. It was Elfstone, and it was my pick because I still
really
don't understand what that card's doing. But
And he just explained it so well and so French-Canadianly that immediately he just dominated the conversation, and I think I just went, Thamurdered, and that was it. So yeah, we kind of read
and this is also
perfect.
like barring discussions of whether or not theme is the appropriate like semantic choice here, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, Luke,
well, I mean,
was
we can have that discussion too. I just don't expect
don't
it will
care.
Go well.
Yes, agreed.
Well,
so
what it's worth,
we kind of evolved it to you go.
Nope,
I'll
go
stay.
Ahead. Nope.
I was just going to say, so we kind of
Canadian stand up.
we evolved the segment so that we actually we formalized it a little bit for our second run through, and we actually kind of intentionally brought on these challenges to each other. And the goal was to either pick a card that you could not theme murder, or whatever the opposite of that would be. I guess something that's so good it can't be challenged. I'm not exactly sure, but yeah. So I'll be curious to see how you've decided to unfold it. But you kind of gave us some hints, and I think we've got some cards ready.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, for what it's worth, I would argue that the opposite of the easily the murdered card would probably in Game of Thrones be a Nedley card, as the term goes. Mm. I don't think that exactly exists in Lord of the Rings, but in Game of Thrones, Ned is kind of known as the player type, of course stolen from Eddard Stark in the books. But the player type that really cares about the flavor and theme. Okay.
There's a Lord of the Rings player archetype for that too, isn't there?
Yeah, but
there are, but no one cares. Yeah.
Like, the Thrones community has really embraced the whole, I'm a Jamie, I'm a Shagga, I'm a Ned.
Was Bilbo the lore guy?
Bilbo was the lore guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
What were the others? Yeah, Sam?
It was Bilbo, Pippin, and Lord Bilbo, Boromir, right?
And Boromir.
Yeah, Boromir's your win. Yeah, I play to win, and Pippin is I play to see all the cute interactions.
Karjank, and yeah.
Yeah, man, I'm like a relatively new Lord of the Rings player. I've only been playing the game for like a year.
Do you own everything yet?
Almost.
Yeah, that's how that works.
Do you want a collection? Because I've got one.
Maybe.
It's awkward. Move on.
Yeah, we can haggle later. Okay, so I had everybody pick out some cards beforehand that tentatively I've just labeled as good and bad, because I didn't really know what to call those two categories when I started typing up my stuff. So we're just gonna jump in. We're gonna let somebody pick one of their cards. We're not gonna have a set order to whether we're doing all the good ones first or bad ones second or anything like that. We can bounce around a little bit, and so that person can read it. They can try to mount their defense, and then everyone else can, you know, assail them. Is that good?
So who wants to be victimized first?
I mean,
I volunteer as tribute
first, right? Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, okay, so let's go good first. So my first pick for an awesome theme card is Wolf's Box Sansa. So
that's a good one.
As you may remember, she is a 2-cost Stark character, loyal, intrigue and power icons, 4 strength, lady traded. Sansa Stark gets -1 strength for each Stark character in your dead pile, and while Sansa Stark's strength is 0, she gains insight. And dear God, if this isn't Sansa's story arc in a text box. It's so perfect. She starts out as this naive little I want to be a princess character, and through several heartbreaking moments, she just slowly learns that the world is terrible and is terribler at every turn. And when she's beaten down to her lowest level, then she knows.
Challenge.
Go on.
Your reference here, your explanation, she starts as this young, naive person. A 2-cost character starting at 4 strength, Sean, doesn't sound very
She's betrothed. To me. She's betrothed to the king.
I don't see that on the card.
I'm just saying, man. Like,
what's the flavor text?
To me,
dude, she has the same strength point as Kat, because I'm taking Sean's side on this. She has the same strength point as Kat and Corset Cersei, and I think that like that just shows like what her station is in the universe. I'm all about this card, and since characters die so quickly though, and so she gets her strength lowered so quickly.
Yep. So Ryan, to counter your argument, I would say, have you ever talked to a naive person, an ignorant person? Aren't they remarkably strong-willed?
Sean, I'm doing it right now. Hey-o!
Okay, could I try a different tack then? And can I just point out...
That depends which side are you going to be on.
That no person has arms that long.
That's not true.
Point of order, we don't talk about art on podcasts.
Point of order, we do fact. And second point of order, I can't actually assail the text box of the card because this was one of the ones I chose. Because this is probably the most Nedley card in the entire
She's even got the hairnet in her hands.
Well, yeah. There was a reason I decided to go first.
Don't get me wrong. It's an absolutely solid choice. I think the one thing that I would challenge, the thing that I would say is not an absolute grand slam on the card, is starting with four strength is pretty... That's powerful. Yeah. For a two-cost character, that is powerful.
Well, and when she starts, she's like a 13-year-old girl that literally doesn't know anything. Like, how is she being so competitive at intrigue when she's frankly an idiot?
No,
he's an idiot savant.
That's not the point, though, because like being part of an intrigue challenge means that she might be a piece that's moving around.
Well, but then her text needs to include something along the lines of when she's paired with other Stark characters or something.
No, you don't get to add to her text. Her text is perfect as printed.
I disagree. I do not think we have achieved perfection here. Not with the four strength. It's too much. It's too much.
Yeah, but I mean, you know how quickly characters die.
It's a Thermurder.
No! I believe me. This is not a Thermurder. By this is a Thermaining at
Thermaining.
Not even that. No, it's absolutely a solid choice. But
so if you want to talk about being paired with other stuff, look at her flavor text. It says, "Help me," she prayed. "Send me a friend." A true knight to champion.
Help me, she prayed.
So
send
what,
me a friend.
Jaime Lannister? I think that's the only knight that can like participate with her on those intrigues.
She's got a power icon as well.
You can't separate those. She has four strength in both.
I'm just saying this. She is coming out like wailing pretty hard with that strength, and yet her flavor text is, "Oh, help me!" She prays.
She's enthusiastic and bombastic when she starts, and then she gets knocked down a few pegs. That's how it works.
I'm okay with the knocking down. It's the initial confidence she's displaying in which she gets to win these intrigue challenges.
But you're not even taking into account the feudal system and the fact that her rank of a major house. As the preeminent lady that's not named Catelyn is betrothed to the heir to the entire Seven Kingdoms.
But she's too naive to utilize it throughout the story.
Well, that's fair, but she's still queen to be. Even at her stupidest, she wields a ridiculous amount of power.
What did she accomplish, Sean?
There's a bunch of Stark characters in your dead pile, so not a whole lot.
Right. Everybody died to Tears of Lys.
I'm just saying the effect would be the same if she started a two-string.
All right, smartass, what you got?
Oh, no, I'm good. Are we done with Sansa?
You don't have someone lined up to attack?
Sansa Thamained.
I wouldn't even call it a Thamaming, really, but...
Stubbed her toe.
It was a Thanitpicking.
Yeah, I'll go with that. Yes, I'll give you that. Yeah, I can go if we want to transition here from that terrible choice. So one of my number one good picks was Attachment Ghost from Watchers on the Wall, where he's simply a Night's Watch or Stark character only with an interrupt effect of when attached character would be killed, return Ghost to your hand to save that character. I think it's a home run myself. He dashes in, he saves you from certain death, disappears back into the woods. You got to put some food and water out to get him to come back and hang out with you again. I love it. I don't even need to say anymore. It's perfect. It's perfection. Let's move on. Two cost, one for the food, one for the water. Done. What else you guys got?
Someone's got to be able to attack that, right?
So
what Stark character did he save in the books?
Spoiler alert, Sean, but his name is Jon Snow. And I believe he saves him multiple times.
That doesn't sound like a Stark character to me. That specifically sounds like a bastard.
Interesting that they put Night's Watch or Stark character only on there, though. Come on.
I think Sean's saying that's the problem.
So here's also one of my problems. He's also non-loyal. And we all know that dogs are man's best friends and are, like, renowned for their loyalty.
How is loyalty
I don't think that the... I mean, I understand, like, mechanically why they had to make it that way, but as a theme card...
Also, he's not a dog.
He's...
Different. Different.
Is it that different?
And dire wolves are far more finicky with their loyalties.
They're wild.
Are they? Every single dire wolf in this story that is attached to one of the Stark or Snow children, as we say, is, like, fiercely loyal to their companion.
Well, there's no wild mechanic animals. For loyal to Jon Snow.
Look at Nymeria. Well,
actually, there are, like, loyalties for that.
I could say Jon Snow only.
I would like to take a brief branch off of this, then. How, and this is a legitimate question, how is Eddard Stark not a loyal card?
I think that's one of my
first major issues with the term loyal.
I think that's, like, pretty easily explained. Will, do you want to get that or me?
I mean, I had the same question, but I think what it boils down to is that he should probably say, like, loyal to Stark and Baratheon. Because, I mean, he was Robert's only true friend,
sure,
as the saying goes.
I can get behind that.
Yeah, I also think that, like, Eddard always does his duty. And so, like, if... I don't think it would have mattered if Robert were king, or if somebody else were king, or somebody else were queen. Like he would have done his duty and would have been loyal to the realm.
Oh, really? Ooh, what if Aerys Targaryen was king?
Except for maybe Aerys. Yeah. because he was loyal, but he was loyal to his friend, which was not a Stark, and so it doesn't mean that you're loyal to your own house, you're loyal to the realm. Like, you went with your friend. That doesn't...
Okay,
I don't know.
So, following that explanation, I'm going to go ahead and point out the fact that Ghost, throughout the story, leaves Jon for significant periods of time to go off and do his own little ghost thing. Non-loyal.
Jon also sends him away on a couple of occasions, too, so...
Well, if he were loyal, he wouldn't have listened. He would have stuck around and been like, I'm just going to hang out in the outskirts of the woods and protect you.
So we're saying in this case the theme of a loyal marker is, like, just proper healing training.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So we're saying also that Ghost doesn't ever... Ghost chooses when to come back?
I think what we're saying is you guys don't have anything on me right now, and I am destroying this conversation. Right
this
now.
Is a this is a tough one. You said you wanted to have somebody assail it, and I'm trying, and this is a really...
Well,
really
I wanted to have somebody assail it correctly.
I don't know that there's much to do with it. I mean, like, it is a legitimately good pick. Yeah,
I can get behind the logic you're tackling of being able to attach into, you know, any Night's Watch versus Stark character.
Mm-hmm.
While I do think it would make sense to have an effect where he attaches only to Jon Snow would be obviously more thematic, but just
but
a terrible card.
Would be garbage. Yeah, it would be so terrible.
Okay, yeah, here's one. Right. How many times does he actually save Jon?
I can think of at least once.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, I can only think of
it up with an example.
Just the one time in the Lord Commander Solar?
Yeah, that's all I can think of. So shouldn't this be, like, discard Ghost or sacrifice Ghost, rather?
No, because he's preparing to show up and do it again while we create our own narrative. Done.
No, I'm actually with Brian on that one. I think that this is super interesting in the way that, like, because Ghost in particular, and I'm contradicting all of my, like, previous arguments, but, like, Ghost in particular was always...
Yes.
Well, it was always the... He was always the runt of the litter. He was always the outcast. And so he's always the one that acts a little bit differently than the other ones. And so the fact that he gets to return to hand is interesting in that you kind of, like, as the player, get from a meta perspective, get to choose how to deploy him next. I think that is interesting. And he also, like, he's not mean to John's friends, so the Night's Watch thing makes sense. I'm convincing myself.
Well,
what you left out, Brian, is that Jon Snow has in fact been printed as a Stark card at this point.
I was trying to remember that. I couldn't. Was that his
but, He has two versions that are Night's Watch too.
Second. Yeah, and he's got two Night's Watch versions now.
Oh man. There's a lot of Jon Snows out there. I'm gonna look that up right now.
Yeah. I probably the most printed character.
Him and soon to be Margaery, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I think it turns out Brian's in the lead so far.
Yeah, Brian picked a good one.
On what scoring system?
The Brian system.
The points are arbitrary and don't matter.
Oh, okay, that's fair.
Yeah. So, okay, Luke, why don't you throw one at us now?
Okay, so I tried to pick cards that were sort of on the fringe that don't have like big names attached to them. And so
like Ghost.
Yeah, I mean, Ghost is a pretty major character. so is Sansa, so, okay. I'm going to go with The Dragon's Tale.
I actually saw
it's my favorite card.
Which side are you arguing here?
I'm arguing that it's a thematic win.
Hmm. Agreed.
Okay.
And it's
explain
so,
how.
So the fact that it has the omen trait is instantly a great reference to the text. But I love the fact that, like, when you play it, you are interpreting the dragon's tail, like, in the sky as this thing that's going to get me the thing that I need because I know that I am in the better position. But your opponent might get to see the thing that they want, which means that they actually had the better interpretation of the comet. And okay. I just love the fact that it's just an instantaneous thing where you both see this card and you go, ooh, I wonder what that is. And then you get to see the two cards off the top of your deck and one of you clearly comes out with the better end of that stick.
Okay, I have 2 points of attack here, okay? First one is an omen like this in the novels, this meteor that was, you know, flying through the sky and could be seen with this tail and all, or comet or whatever it was. Like, how does it jive that this is an event that you choose to actively play? Like, no one in like Cersei didn't go, hey, somebody load up one of the trebuchets and throw a rock, you know? Like, it's not somebody's choice. It was an outside force that happened. And point two, how does it jive that if you're the first one that noticed it, i.e. you're the one that played it, how do you get less of a benefit out of this? Like, if you're interpreting this omen, like, shouldn't the first one to see it and act on it get more of a benefit? Like, because
well,
no. You're only up one card when you play this.
No, like, well, the first point of attack is a mechanical concern, not a thematic concern.
We're not here to talk about mechanic murder.
Exactly. And so the second concern, though, like, I see the logic on the surface, but when you go down into it, like, really, this card draw in games, like, especially Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones, indicates knowledge or some sort of, like, hidden information. And, like, the fact that you saw it first and you played it means that you think that you have better stuff that you're going to see than your opponent. And your opponent may actually end up having better stuff, which means that they interpreted the comet better than you did.
So you're not really addressing the fact that they get more cards out of that, though. They get more knowledge.
They might, which is why I think it's a really good thematic win. Like,
I have
you're arguing mechanics and not... You're arguing mechanics and not... Like theme.
Mechanics are intrinsic to representing theme in a card game.
I got you back. Hold on, I got you back. This card is woefully inappropriate for the melee format.
Oh, it's wonderful.
There is absolutely I mean I'm talking thematically.
Oh. Well,
everyone.
Because everyone should be able to draw two.
You shouldn't be able to just pick one other person at the table. Oh, well, the Starks saw it, and the Targaryens saw it, but the Lannisters never saw it? No way. All of Westeros and the people on that other island that probably sounds like Easteros or whatever it's called.
Here's my push.
Everybody saw this.
Essos,
that's it.
So here's my push.
Everybody knows Easteros.
Here's my push.
Figured out their naming scheme, guys. Here's everybody saw this. Everybody took information from it. Everybody had a different interpretation of it. This should not be limited to only two potential people at a single table.
See, here's my pushback. So
I'm ready.
This is like indicative of some religious or like deep religious interpretation, and not everybody in the Seven Kingdoms looked at that comet and like gave a shit. So, like, you might have the people who are on the Iron Throne who say, I think it's this, and then you may have Stannis who says, I think it's this. And so you have two clear rivals who are on the same continent because they're not even on, we're not even talking about Essos at that point, and they are in direct opposition to one another because of the way they interpreted this comet. Whereas you might have Dany across the Narrow Sea who sees it this particular way, and somebody else who sees it a different way, and... Like, for instance, the Tyrells don't have a particular, like, interpretation of it, and they are kings of the Reach. And, like,
number one, sorry, this is not what I was originally going to address, but I feel like I have to address, they are not kings, and they never have been.
They are lords.
And they never have been.
They literally haven't. It was the Gardeners that were formerly kings of the Reach. But,
yes.
Okay, if different houses do or do not have a determination, like, and bother to care about this omen, why do you get to determine what houses bother to care? Shouldn't they decide?
And
yeah, well,
we have,
I mean, if we're really going to talk about if we're really
in this game that they could have triggered off of.
They could have, but if we're going to talk about mechanics, then I'm going to say that Melee isn't actually a real format, according to FFG. So it doesn't actually matter in that context.
All right, let's not get nihilist on this, all right? No, I love this card, so I would posit that if you're playing this card, you're probably playing three copies. So it's not a matter of the fact that not everyone notices it when it's obviously a very noticeable piece, but like when you've got a constellation, or when Halley's Comet comes around, is everyone looking at it at every second of its orbit when it's around
Earth?
Yeah,
hey Sean, how many opponents do you have? How many opponents do you have at a full Melee table? Three.
I don't know why I thought that was a trick question.
That sounded like a trick question.
So there you go. Yeah.
Right, so 50% of the world's population doesn't see the comet because I chose that they don't get to see it.
That is the night and day cycle of your standard spherical planet.
I don't think it's that big a planet.
Yeah, Westeros is big, but I'm pretty sure when it's day in the Reach, it's also day in King's Landing.
There's a lot of north-south going on this planet. It's not a...
Westeros is only part of the entire Planetos, so...
Yeah, but it's the only part we care about.
Is it called Planetos?
I'm just going to use that because it sounded good.
And the Arctic North Duros.
I'm just going to use that because it sounded good, but, you know.
Okay. All right, well, I think discussion has probably reached its logical conclusion on the Dragon's Tale.
Let's be careful with the use of the word logic.
I think Brian was the clear winner on this one.
Yes!
Well.
Yeah, I think so.
I told you guys, all you do is
understand what you're doing.
You just have to yell the loudest and you win.
I didn't go into this thinking that this was going to be a point system.
That was your first mistake.
Yeah. And so I went into this thinking, I wonder what interesting cards that somebody has not picked out. So I was like, I'm going to do those.
I'm giving you due credit in that I love this card. Mm-hmm. Your interpretation is exactly what the theme is going for, in my opinion at least. Mm-hmm. So it's absolutely a
terrific
card.
So I'm just going to keep doing that and underperforming, which is okay.
Perfect.
It's what I've come to expect.
Oh man, I almost let that one slip right on by.
I think we found the Dragon's Tale on that discussion.
Indeed. Okay. So that sends it over to me. I'm gonna jump to the bad end of the scale. I've got one that I think has by default already murdered itself. The suicide? And it just doesn't roll off the tongue.
Suicide.
suicide. That just sounds like I've got a lisp.
Oh, God.
Okay, so my card is Salt Wife. This is a Greyjoy non-unique.
Totally agree.
Two cost, one strength, power icon, companion trait. It's not loyal. Challenges action. Sacrifice Salt Wife to choose a character. Till the end of the phase, that character cannot be declared as a defender. I think we need to talk about what Salt Wives are in the books.
Can
like,
we not?
You know,
this card
kind of
is actually,
sad
in general.
I actually have a defense for this card.
Wait, okay, you can get there. So here's the thing. Salt Wives are essentially, you know, a lot of folks know the kind of stereotypical saying about Neanderthal men clubbing a woman over the head and dragging her back to their cave. That is what the Greyjoys do with mainlanders. That is Salt Wives. That is them just abducting these women and taking them back for, well, breeding and housework purposes. And frankly, this card, to me, has no connection whatsoever to that. If I was making this card, it would just be the text of the Stark Attachment Ward, but could only go on, like, lady and companion characters.
Oh my gosh. Because companion, we all know what that means.
Exactly.
Shout out to Banter, we'll miss you, Craven.
You just take control of them. That would be way more Nedley than this travesty.
I would definitely agree with that. I really, you know what? I want to hear the defense. I want to hear the defense of the card.
Okay, so
He's reaching.
No. So it does have
the companion trait. So yeah. That much is good.
We all know what companion means. So, but not, yeah, well, we all know that too.
Nope, that's enough.
I think that it's like, this is probably not a very good defense, but I'm going to try because you
somebody
put it out
has
there.
To.
Yeah. So the Salt Wife, card here, I think is clearly like going for, Theon's voyage back to Pike. And I think that, like, he's not in any way, shape, or form focused on what might happen so much as he is on his goal, which is just, like, his entire, like, offense, which is not defense, right? And so I think that if you like, have a character who's just, like, banging the Salt Wife, they're not thinking about what's gonna happen elsewhere. And so I think that that's, like, the goal of this card, which is, like, a horrible, horrible thing. And just, like, in my opinion, like, pre-props and slops, like, slops to Salt Wife as a design decision. Because I think that that's where everybody goes in terms of their, like, trying to think of how this relates mechanically to theme.
I mean, well, so, as okay, a design decision, can I just say I love the card in it from a gameplay perspective. Like,
sure,
it's a good card.
Sure. But from a theme perspective, I'm like,
I guess I'm coming around on the theme a little bit, actually, when I think about it, though. I mean, this idea that you have captured your opponent's people, their women, and the idea of sacrificing and killing them is very demoralizing. I mean...
Oh, no, it's the wife of the character you're choosing.
Yes.
That's also terrible.
You captured Eddard's wife, and you make it very publicly known that you have killed her, and
or
Eddard
just
is
her
just
assault
stricken
wife.
With grief, and he's done. Like, oh, I came
what
around.
What if your opponent has Catelyn in play?
This is our own narrative once again.
So Eddard's married to someone else?
Yeah. He's got lots of wives in my game.
So we move from nihilism to subjectivism. I don't think these are good arguments.
100%. No, I'm totally on board with this card. I've completely come around.
I don't think that it like has no thematic implications, but I understand Will's reservations, especially considering the fact that like this is purely a mechanical card, like from a design perspective. I don't think that they were going for this. But
yeah,
if they were, though, then man, that's some morbid shit.
What was the effect? Because I remember looking at the Salt Wife card in the first edition. What was its effect in that game? Do you remember?
Oh,
I don't.
God.
It made me very uncomfortable because you had to explain to me what a Salt Wife was.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that conversation. Let's go find that.
I didn't know what the Greyjoys were all about at that point.
We will find it.
God, and the art is so much more depressing.
The art is
you kneel to influence to save an Ironborn character from being killed.
Oh, that's I don't think that's a win either.
No, that's way worse than that. I've totally come around on this card, actually. I didn't think about it, because as soon as you said it, I was like, 100%, I agree. And I remember looking at this one today, thinking whether I wanted to add it to my list, but I've completely come around on this. I think it actually makes... It's not a perfect theme home run by any means, but I do like what it's getting at.
So you're leaning on the fact that it's a demoralizing gesture specific person, and that's the person who can't be a defender.
Correct.
Ugh. I can see that.
That is so much more like
this card makes me
than my interpretation.
Okay, well, point to me then.
I would argue that's a theme maiming at least.
It makes about as much sense as you already having 2 points.
It did get maimed.
Yes, that's a 2-maim vote.
Okay, who's up? I guess that sends it back to Sean. We'll just keep rotating in order then.
All right, we'll do something slightly different here. So I suppose we'll shift back to a good card.
Okay. So
one card whose theme I absolutely adore, and this one's super simple. I don't know what holes you guys are going to be able to poke in this one, but it's the plot, A Game of Thrones. So as I'm sure you'll remember, it's a 4-2-1 plot scheme trait. A player cannot initiate a military or power challenge unless he or she has won an intrigue challenge that phase. So this is... You give me a second.
Oh, no, I'm nodding in agreement.
So this to me is Game of Thrones in a plot, surprisingly. So this just perfectly... Yeah, thank you. This just perfectly demonstrates that whole thought of you need to be able to play the game to do anything at all. If you can't play the Game of Thrones, you shouldn't even be in the game at all.
Okay, I've got an attack here. This is the best I can muster for this one.
Lay it on me.
When you think A Game of Thrones, both the first novel and the concept of the Game of Thrones that you win or you die, and this whole intrigue first kind of mentality, there are two things that you think of when you think of that, right? You think Lannisters and you think Littlefinger. And you know what both of those mean? Money. You know what this plot does not provide enough of? Money.
I won't disagree with that.
I'm going to take it a step further, and the most perhaps important quote of this entire series, right, is when you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die. There is no middle ground. I see a lot of middle ground in this card.
Ooh. Yeah, like if you lose an intrigue challenge, you should have to kill a character.
Or perhaps someone initiates an intrigue challenge against you, and then they just stop right there. Your opponent hasn't died. No one's been killed. Yet there's just this willy-nilly intrigue stuff going on. Sorry, Sean. I'm not on board with this one.
I know you super are, though.
Or it could be House Lannister only.
It's very, very good. I would... only for the sake of, because we're in a Themurder segment, I would say that legitimately what it should do is there should be... This should be one of the cards that creates a kill effect based on an intrigue challenge, where you are removing your opponents from the world by playing the Game of Thrones rather than an outright military attack or challenge.
Well, I mean, if we're removing mechanics and balance from the equation entirely, yes, I agree with you.
Oh, you do, eh?
But in a world where this game actually has to function... this encapsulates the entire theme of what an intrigue challenge is.
Agreed.
It's absolutely, it's as close to perfect as you get.
But he admits not perfect.
There is no such thing as perfect.
I already blew my one attack. That's all I got.
Yeah, I was totally trying to get my dog to come in, so I didn't hear any of this discussion.
Just assume that Sean, challenge gets on the board with a second point, and we'll go to the next card.
All right, I'm gonna throw out one of my bad ones, and this is one that I'm legitimately looking for an explanation on it because it doesn't register with me. I just don't really understand what it's trying to get at, and perhaps people who are more familiar with the novel lore will be able to help me out with this one. I went with Storm's End, the Baratheon location. Reaction: after you win dominance, discard one power from your faction card to choose two characters. Each of those characters gains one power. What are we doing here?
Okay. I think I got it here, right? So Storm's End is known for standing against everything that assails it, right? And Stannis was going to lay siege to Storm's End to get, let's see, which of Robert's bastards was it that was housed Edric over there? Storm. What's that?
Edric Storm.
Oh, yes, Edric Storm. And what was the castellan that was protecting him?
One of the Florence.
Sir Courtney Penrose.
Oh, Penrose. There we go.
Penrose? Okay. So here's my thing. The way Game of Thrones is trying to represent mechanically the theme of, you know, standing there and taking everything that's thrown at you is having all these standing characters to win dominance, right? And then the characters that gain power are Edric and Sir Courtney for weathering that storm.
Ooh, that's pretty good. I also think it's kind of the ancestral seat of House Baratheon, and since they're the current holders of the Iron Throne, like at least in law, at the end of everything that's going on, like you could interpret it as whoever is remaining as a Baratheon loyalist is getting some power, or you could interpret it as maybe some of Robert's bastards are getting power. You know, Gendry has that same mechanic. Edric Storm helps you win dominance. I don't know. I think that that's... I think it's pretty cool.
I would also posit that Storm's End, at least to Stannis, was like a scuffed-up prize that he got from Robert. He was not... Very
but he
clean.
Didn't get Storm's End. He got Dragonstone. Renly got Storm's End.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Fall that apart, yep. Right there.
Yeah, plus I wouldn't imagine it would give him power then. He wouldn't.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. It's the ancestral seat of House Baratheon, and that was like
Storm's
the whole
End
point.
Was the prize. I was totally thinking of Dragonstone.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll get a better... Hopefully
you
we'll
shouldn't
get
a... be. It was a terrible argument.
I mean, like, mechanically, really, what's going on here is just, like, more dominance tech that's less vulnerable than just doing Chamber of the Painted Table. But...
I love the mechanic of it. I'm a big fan. I'd actually like to see...
More vulnerable than Chamber of the Painted Table.
I'd actually like to see the reverse, where you can move power from a character onto your action card. That would be interesting.
That would be more protective, I think, for the ancestral seat of Baratheon.
Also super NBE. Can't wait to just move off all of my power that I got from Robert challenges with his renown onto my faction card and then like not
then
give a shit if you reset my board.
Power challenge ever.
Yeah. To sacrifice the character.
Sacrifice is one thing, but I mean if that you just reset my board and I use Spears of the Merlin King to put him back in my hand, like I don't care.
Sacrifice doesn't put him in your dead pile, right?
No, sacrifice is discarded.
Exactly.
Okay, so it would have to be
a die. Well, no, it would have to be a sacrifice effect, because then you can't, like, return them to hand, or you can't close call them, or you can't Ghosts of Harrenhal. Like, sure. Sacrifice would be way worse. Because then you'd have to just straight up ditch them.
And really, then that card shouldn't exist, is what we're hearing.
That's what
Well, I want it.
I don't know. I think it's like kind of 50-50. Like it's like half we needed something to push dominance tech away from just Chamber of the Painted Table, and then like half I can kind of stretch it to a theme thing.
It was like a limit one power per
Tobo Mott's armory, yo.
Ooh.
Togomot's armory.
Are we moving on? Is that your card?
I was going to say, Togomot's armory has an incredible thematic explanation.
That's not my card.
Okay.
But I will agree with you.
I'm willing to give Luke one half of 1 point on this one, and Brian one half of 1 point.
Yes!
Well done, gentlemen.
Is it my turn?
Okay. I think it's Luke.
Okay, so for my other fringe card that people undoubtedly the murder, or at least the maim, I'm going all the way back to the core set with the Tickler.
I looked at this guy myself.
And so what I like about the Tickler is that when you kneel him, because presumably he's been sitting on the outside, not participating in the actual fray, and then you kneel him and interrogate somebody, and 9 times out of 10, it doesn't really net you any information. But the one time that it does, you find that asshole that you were looking for, and then you bomb that dude off the board.
Oh, I hit an Eddard the other day. It was glorious.
Dude, at Gen Con last year, somebody tickled my arbor.
That sounds so dirty.
That's also our podcast motto.
Hashtag tickle my arbor.
We tickle your arbor.
So that's my baseline defense. And then we'll see how many people...
I don't like the fact that this can affect any kind of card.
That's the one thing I haven't really been... I don't know. I think I have a defense for it, but yeah, you can stretch it easily.
It definitely needs to be characters, in my opinion, but yeah.
But if you could say where is this person, then that's locations, right? And if you're looking for gold or assets, that's an attachment. Or or if you're looking for information about a plot that they're hatching, that's an event. Or even a plot for that matter. I don't know. I think it's pretty good.
I don't like that it doesn't require any kind of winning of a challenge. There's no other. You're not actually interacting with an opponent's character at all to actually interrogate them.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, then you should probably hate Storm's End too.
I do now. Freaking Dragonstone.
So correct me if I'm wrong here, but if you were to discard, a Milk of the Poppy, you'd be able to get rid of one of those from the board state as well. Then, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like that either. What, he interrogated somebody and he figured out the chemical...
He dabbles in chemistry. Yeah.
He figured out the Narcan of Westeros.
Now he's a pharmaceutical rep going to jail for sales fraud or securities fraud, I mean.
Like I said, I picked cards that legitimately were on the fringes, and I just thought that this guy had a really cool effect that could be easily stretched to a thematic win.
I'm not going to say easily, but I'll say stretched.
We're definitely not quite at a Themassacre level.
Yeah. It's a lot of violent M words.
Yeah.
Maimed.
The mauling.
Maul. Massacre.
It's murdered. It's a good choice. I'm not 100% sold, but it's a good choice.
And I do like the fact that it's a dominance action, which basically means he's got to stay out of all the fighting. He's hiding in his little stronghold.
He's sitting out in Harrenhal, just like...
doing his thing. Yeah. Yep. I like it.
Okay. So this one, you were 4, correct, Luke?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I am awarding you 1 full point.
Whoa. That's strong.
I think that's good.
That's strong.
I think we like points in this game.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm amazed that we're still doing points.
Oh, yeah. You know, at first, I just said it as a joke, just to, award Brian, even though you guys argued harder just because Brian was on my side. But then I thought, I'm going to start writing this down.
Yeah, no, I went and got the dog in, but I just grabbed 2 more beers. So,
okay. So, is it up with me next?
I believe so.
Yes, back to you.
So, I'm going to go with a bad card again.
If we ever do this again, then I'm just like picking awesome cards that like nobody can ever assail.
Hey, no, I purposely tried to pick ones that I thought could generate a little bit of discussion. Well, okay, except for maybe the bad ones. They're just bad. Like this one. There are no men like me. This is a Lannister event. It's not loyal.
You win.
Yeah, it costs one. It says action, choose a knight character until the end of the phase. That character does not kneel when declared as an attacker or defender in a military challenge. It effectively turns someone into Corset Jaime. There are no men like me.
Except whoever you pay one gold to make just like me.
Yes.
Although I the only challenge I will say is that there is that really famous quote that says any knight can make a knight.
Then that's what this card should be titled.
I'm with you. I'm just saying that like I feel like that was sort of the flavor aspect of it, but that's already a flavor text on knighted. So
I think we have our first flawless contribution to this segment.
The massacre literally contradicts exactly what the game text does.
Yes,
you win.
You're right. Like, if they had changed it to that quote instead of "there are no men like me," like are no men like me in a sarcasm font, then maybe I'd get behind it.
Slash S.
No,
yeah,
in comics, you know what's mean.
You know what's even better? Look at the flavor text. They doubled down on it. It's there's only me.
Yes.
You
win.
Yeah,
that's,
no, you just get right, this
yeah, card. You can have like 3 points on that one, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, I award myself 2 points, one for the title, one for the flavor text.
Yep. I might be down for that.
I'm not going to fight it.
Yeah.
Yep, no qualms.
This is one I'd invite your listeners to send in on, because I bet somebody's got a thought, but
it's probably not a good thought.
Well chosen. Yeah. Well chosen.
All right.
So I think back that to throws it back to me. All right, so starting that in on
follow
my...
up after that, huh?
Yeah, I know, right? Well, turns out it's another Jamie moment event.
Ooh.
So one that I think is a bad theme is Daring Rescue. And I really only have a nitpick with a single piece of this card, or rather, a single piece that's not on this card. So it's a one-cost Lannister event, play only if you control a knight character. Challenges action, return a character you control to its owner's hand, then if you have a knight character you control, gain a power. How is this not a save? Isn't that literally what a rescue is?
That seems legit. I'm pretty sure he did save Brienne.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. He literally jumped into a bear pit, and then everybody was like, "Oh shit, that's Jaime Lannister. Let's shoot the bear." I'm adamantly opposed to that logic. I think that this card is because the gain of power part is whatever, because I don't think that Jaime like gained any notoriety that he didn't already have because of this act, but. I don't think it should have been a save.
How does the return to hand line up with anything?
You're pulling them out of danger before their life is absolutely threatened.
And nobody knew where Brienne was anyway.
That's what a save is.
Well,
but they didn't know. They didn't pull Brienne out of danger. They killed the bear.
Yeah.
So this
should
be like kill an attacking creature.
No, but nobody knew where Brienne was anyway, because everybody thought that she was on the run after everybody said that she killed Renly. And so being in your hand is like totally hidden information. I think that's interesting.
I think it's going back to this idea of the saving implies that character is going to die, whereas Jaime is jumping in to the situation before Brienne is... 100% like
what?
Bound and determined to die.
If Jaime had not jumped into that pit, Brienne would have been toast.
Oh, Mr. Fortune Teller over here seems to know everything that's going to happen in the book series.
Now, see,
no way.
No. See, you guys can't give it to Will.
Nobody's
not recognize
dead until you see it.
It's not necessarily a bad representation of what happened in the book. It's that the title completely fights the text.
I I mean, I'm with you here. I don't think that's great. And I would also argue, we keep talking about Jamie jumping into the pit. That sounds way more like putting a character from your hand into play than returning one.
Yes.
No, because Jamie would never have been killed because he was the person that they were dying to protect the entire time anyway.
Meat shield.
There you go. Meat shield.
No, because they still had to fight the thing until they actually
quotes daring rescue.
Slash S.
It should have a sarcastic risk.
I think it's a worthy contribution. I do not think this is the worst example of a theme.
No, I'm sorry. If I had not read you the text and I said, this card is Daring Rescue, what do you think it does?
I think it would pop somebody back to hand if you control a knight character and then have another knight character.
To my hand so that they were no longer in any form of danger. I think it makes complete sense.
I also think it's particularly potent too, because you have to control the knight character, and so like you and they're clearly going for the fact that Jamie has to be the one to go rescue Brienne because Brienne isn't a knight.
Well, sure, but you could pop the knight character back to your hand. It turns out then this card should just be called GTFO,
which is actually my favorite use of it because I just Harrenhal it Gregor in, and then I use this card and pull him back.
I had a stupid 7-cost Joffrey kill deck that used this to recur him every turn.
Love it.
Also awesome.
I hold it's not a rescue.
Mm.
You're right.
If they're not in peril, it's not a rescue.
It's a daring rescue.
God.
Oh. I don't know how they're not in peril, though, because, like, clearly the person... I don't know, man.
I think we're going around in circles on this one at this point.
Is this another one of those half and halves?
Yeah, I think so.
Less than 3/4 the point.
You can get the fuck off of this podcast and your own podcast.
One half of a point.
I'll take
Luke,
it.
Luke, you now have 2/2 of a point.
Nice.
Sweet.
Okay. Who's up next?
That was your Sean, right?
Yep.
Okay. How much longer do you want this segment to go is a good question.
Doesn't
matter. Let's finish this rotation at least, I think.
Sounds good. I'm going to bring you the creme de la creme of thematically pleasing cards. This card is so good, it will remain forever unchallenged in the annals of the murder history for as long as this game... Shall it is not. That would have been a great transition. And now I'm really struggling to come up with a good segue to get into
this
one.
It made my short list.
The card that I have chosen as the most thematically, intensely amazing card in this entire game that I built an entire deck around.
Get ready for the anticlimax.
Fishing net.
Oh.
The Greyjoy attachment. Wow. Opponent's character only, attached character, cannot be declared as a defender. It even has the types item, weapon, and condition, just to remind you that being trapped in a net is definitely a condition from which you suffer. Bring it on, guys!
I would also hold that if you're trapped in a net, you should not be able to be declared as an attacker, either.
Oh, have you ever seen somebody in a net? They can definitely come at you.
Have you ever seen someone in a net?
Absolutely. As an avid fisherman myself.
Wait, where are you?
People on the coastlines.
I was going to, No.
Somebody in a net can still possibly get themselves up and start running at you, right? And if you see somebody coming at you in a net and they've got a sword, you're still going to be a little threatened by that. But when you turn the tables even slightly on them and you are now the one making the offensive moves, in a net, no way. They're done. Fishing net.
Backpedaling in a net, just
close
not
my laptop. Fishing net.
This really is a game about who yells the loudest.
My favorite thing about the card, however, is that the picture does not show whatsoever what it would actually be utilized for in this game. It's still just a dude catching fish, and a lot of them.
No, like that's that. Kind of like one of the main criticisms. It's not.
Well, we can't show.
No, because he's got
some kind of giant in that net. Look at it. You see the eye and the nose.
Oh yeah, totally.
No, guys, I think you're interpreting the theme of this card.
He's
all
actually
wrong.
Captured the drowned god right there,
dude. If you are using a net with like a spear or a sword, you have weights on it so that they have to stay in it. This is a dude literally using it to fish.
Fishing.
You'd have weights on it then too.
You guys are coming at this all wrong though, because the theme here is not that you're putting the net on the person. You are literally teaching a man to fish, and he is using his turd to fish.
There it is. Defend yourself while you're fishing.
The greater life implications are greater than the card itself.
Allow me to criticize my own choice for perfect.
God, this game's
return.
Getting weird.
There's net.
What I've the seen fuck? In my days of assailing coastlines, I have seen multiple times in which your own fishing net could in fact trap yourself. So I don't really like the fact that it's opponent's character only.
It's true.
You don't want to set this up.
Yeah.
Maybe I've got some janky thing I'm going to try out. Who knows?
Okay,
it's a good way to pretend you forgot how the game works.
You won't put a milk of the poppy on me if I put a fishing net on myself.
Okay, so I have one like in-game mechanical / thematic concern, which is that Maester Cressen can remove this.
Yeah, he gets a knife. Cuts it right off. Done.
Well, no, but like in the middle of the battle, Maester Cressen just like runs over hold on a sec. Hold on a second, big 7 cost character. Like,
you're going after the thematic qualities of Maester Cressen. You leave fishing out of this.
Well, to be fair, I'm actually
going. He's going
to
stop in the middle of a fight and get somebody off of their poppy addiction too.
Probably.
You're losing this one. Come on, man.
He could do the net a lot faster than...
Yeah.
No, you're right. This is like a weird card because I think that you're right in a lot of ways, but I just don't understand
but
how
don't
this
want
made
you
it.
To be right.
I just don't understand how this fucking made it. Like, how did this get here?
I think
are you talking about how did the card get in the game or how did it get in this?
Yeah, Brian, just take your point, dude.
Yeah, I would like more than 1 point on this. First of all, I want 1 point for bringing up the stupid card fishing net. Second of all, I want a point for literally this card inspired me to build my Greyjoy deck, which is now my go-to deck, because the entire purpose was just to throw a fishing net on my opponent, because I cannot imagine a more infuriating card to play than fishing net.
Craven is
worse. No, this is so much more infuriating. Like,
no, Craven is really more infuriating.
But you see it and you're like, oh, that's so frustrating. But then you're like, that's a fishing net. That's a fishing net. You should. No one wants this ever.
Yeah, and then you look at Craven and you go, hey, I called you a coward and now you can't do anything.
Yeah, but look at the guy in that picture. He's super scared. He's real Craven.
Oh my God.
This is a fishing net, man.
We're going to have to agree to disagree on this one. Craven is the worst card to play against.
It is. It really is. Okay. So, Luke, what's your card?
Jesus.
No pressure.
Because my first two got just, like, kind of torn apart. Like, I've kind of been scrambling to find the non-fringe cards. And I feel like I've been fishing net was just, I mean, kudos, man. Like, that was awesome. So I'm going to try to find one that I don't particularly care for, even though I like the card. I'm going to go with Quaithe of the Shadow.
Ooh.
So ambush makes a lot of sense. Her icon pairing is good, her cost point is fine, her strength is fine. What I don't understand is why she just removes some lower strength character from a challenge. And I feel like the thing is going to be that she's trying to remove obstacles from Daenerys' path, but I don't think that that's actually happening. Like, she's not doing anything.
Can you Loremeisters give me a rundown of who this character is?
Sure.
We don't really know much about her.
So,
pops up in random spots.
I was going to say, Quaithe is somebody who has either been to or is from Ashai by the Shadow, and that's denoted by her lacquer mask that she wears, and she, like, appears to Daenerys in these, like, dream states where she gives her, like, riddles and prophecy. And so I think, like, the common interpretation is to just, like, remove obstacles from her path, but, like, I don't understand what's going on with, like such a powerful character who is giving knowledge to one of the main protagonists.
How frequently does this person show up in the book?
I remember twice.
Like, it's just like, maybe two or three times, yeah. Like, she's not there. And so that's why I get the ambush, but I don't get the effect. Like, I don't get the come into play effect.
Because her riddles are so enigmatic that she confuses everyone of a lower caliber.
Yeah, I mean, in that case, I would give her something that made your opponent discard cards, or let you look at their hand, or make you draw cards, something knowledge related.
Right, and she only speaks to Dany, whose strength point is, like, clearly way higher. Like, I mean, I don't know.
I can see the argument that it's a she. This is a confirmed she character. Okay, yep.
Dany describes her as she. Okay, so yeah.
Like, so I can see this argument that she's providing advice and guidance to Dany that allows her to basically ignore the obstacles, like you said, that these lower class, you know, kind of auxiliary unimportant characters throughout the world are providing. They don't provide an obstacle
anymore.
They don't
matter, Dany. You're the center of the universe.
Exactly.
That is her thing, because she says, remember who you are. But what I don't...
like
what
Mufasa.
It's a straight-up callback to it. But what I also don't get is that, like, the companion trait is a little strange, because...
We all know what that means.
Yeah, but Quaithe is not... But Quaithe is not necessarily, like... She's not necessarily, like, directly contributed to anything that Dany has done. And so...
Yeah, because Dany hasn't really taken anything that she said to heart and acted on it, has she?
Right, and... So she's not really Dany's companion so much as she is, like... She's just, like, some Jiminy Cricket that just appears every once in a while.
She's like an elf. She's saying both yes and no. Like, read the flavor text to go north.
Exactly.
You must journey south. To reach the west, you must go east. Sounds like she's just explaining geography.
If somebody said that to me, I'd stab their tires out. That's so annoying.
Which is also horrible writing, but go ahead.
Wait, was this in Feast?
This was Game.
Oh, God, was it the first book?
No, it was not the first book. It had to have been at least Clash, but I bet it was Storm.
I think it was Storm. I don't remember exactly which book, but Dany's on a ship... sleeping in the harbor, and Quaithe comes up to her in a dream, and she tells her all this stuff, and then she wakes up, and Jiki is like, whoa, what's going on? And she's like, I thought there was somebody here, and she's like, there's not been anybody here, Khaleesi. Like, yeah, and so, yeah.
There's none.
It definitely feels like a card that's there to satisfy a mechanical need.
Not yeah, basically, I mean, this is like a like Targ lower strength, because that's the
right.
That's burn.
What they do,
and that's the burn. And so she just says, like, "Screw you if I saved enough gold," and it doesn't actually benefit Dany, which is the only character in the books that we have any interaction with this character with.
I mean, slight pushback there. You know, I would say there is an interaction with Dany. In the, you know, she reduces character strength while they're attacking, so she can bring more characters into range of being affected by Quaithe. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there is a connection. Maybe not a great one, but a connection.
And this is provided that you've saved 3 gold, and one of those is not used for Dracarys.
I mean, maybe they're not attacking with the character you want to Dracarys. Maybe they don't have a character you want to Dracarys.
Or defending.
Choice of card.
Yeah.
Or defending.
Yeah, this is one that speaks mechanically.
Yeah, I don't get quiet.
All right. Another point to Luke.
Points.
Okay.
I love that was like one of the ones I found in the last like 10 minutes.
Don't overthink it, baby.
Okay. I've been back and forth over 2 different ones I have here as a good option. All right, I'm gonna go with the more interesting one of the two in the end. I'll save the other one for the next time we do this episode. This is going to be You Murdered Her Children. It's a 2-cost Martell
event.
Dude,
I almost picked that.
I think I did too.
Yep, I looked at it as well.
Okay, well, challenges action. Choose a Martell character you control until the end of the phase. Double that character's strength. At the end of the phase, that character is still in play. Kill it. So, you know, you can tell from the art, this is representing the scene where the Red Viper hulks out, so to speak. Here he's just enraged in his duel with the Mountain. Spoiler alert here, it goes poorly for him and he dies. Yeah, and it's all pointless in the end.
Eliminated all nuance from that entire scene.
You're welcome. I'm in a hurry at this point. Yeah, I feel like that's
almost too thematic.
Yeah, it's like, you know,
dude,
that
I don't know why you
so
thought
really climatic. You're like, why did this even happen? And it's the same with this card. Why did I even play it?
I don't know why you thought that we were going to be on time limit when we had Sean and Brian on.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
I have nothing
I don't,
to say.
I don't like almost the restriction and how closely it does force you to follow what happened in the story.
I think it renders it unplayable.
Yeah, it's like it sacrifices true play for what it's trying. Like, of course it's a thematic.
Okay, here's a thematic concern. It's not limit once per challenge.
Oh, God. Have you ever
it's tripled? Also, it's also not Red Viper only.
So, no, but like, to be fair, like something like this, if you're really thinking about it, it's like, well, he dies at the end of it because he has this like huge
I'm sorry,
Ladies of Glory thing, and I'm like,
No. Think about, let's think back to the show, right?
Because he
time,
yells it over and over and over again.
Children, you're like, yeah, get him! You just get more and more pumped up, and you can see that rage building. My own strength was doubling every time he said that.
So good. So good.
Only gripe I can
It's
pull
also
up
non-loyal,
one.
Which is dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's only a Martell character.
Pseudo-loyal.
So. Yeah. Yeah. That's all I got.
I'm going to go back to the Eddard Stark thing on that one then and just say that, like, doing what he did was not necessarily in the best interests of his house.
No, it actually was, though, because, like, all they cared about was getting vengeance for Ilya
and
killing Gregor was.
It just crazy didn't work.
No, it just killed him, which is exactly what this card does.
Non-loyal.
So,
yelling.
I think it would have been more interesting to limit it once per challenge, but also to say if you lose that challenge, kill it, but I don't know, maybe that's not as good. Yeah.
I mean, but the Viper won the challenge, so...
Yeah.
Sort of.
It's too restrictive to what actually happens in the story. Like, this is a card you play when you are trying to reenact that particular moment of the story.
This is a card you play when you have a Red Viper combo deck.
Yes, yeah.
So is it fair to say, then, that Will the murdered her children?
Yeah. Oh!
Yeah. Wow.
God. Does that mean I get that point?
I'm so glad that this is, like, a fictional universe.
I was so pumped that I thought Brian was going to come on the show and just clean our clocks at this competition. But there you go. I guess
I found this game far more challenging to find bad theme cards.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think they really nailed it. Kudos to Danny for real.
Which I think is a strength of just the format of the game. It allows a lot of flexibility in how these things are flowing, whereas a game like Lord of the Rings can be a little more restrictive in what its card effects can do. So I think there's so much wide open space with the open-ended format of how you play this game that I think it allows for much better theme development. So, but yeah, I really struggled to find bad cards. Like, there's some obvious ones out there, but I can't even say that because I don't really have any. Like, I can't think of
any. Tried.
Well, yeah, we had a couple, obviously, but yeah, I really struggled.
Yeah.
For all the nitpicks we have about FFG, one thing they are consistently good at is honoring their licenses.
Well, there you go. I guess maybe the next episode will just be titled The Nitpicking instead, then.
Can I have one more card?
Yeah, but we're going to tear it apart.
Okay, so
you don't
want
to lose points at this point, Luke.
I don't care about winning. I care about the punchline.
Oh, boy. Okay. I'm excited for that.
Okay, so I have a card that is just the most thematic win.
It's, I already did fishing net.
It's in... No, this card is indefensible.
Ooh.
So...
That's a bold claim.
We're not playing Bold But True.
We might be.
This card is... Bold But True is also good. I want
to
do that.
Yeah, we need to steal that sometimes.
We're just gonna become coder with AGOT cards instead. This is Hot Pie.
Hot Pie! Hot Pie!
So here's the reason why I think he's a thematic win. He costs way too much to keep around. Doesn't do anything. And his effect is only conditionally useful, which also still renders him irrelevant. And he's also just frickin' useless. You just want to march him to the wall so that he went with Yored instead.
But he adds 2 to your dominance total.
Not if you kneel him to lower the cost of the next unique character.
I don't know. I see a lot of flexibility in his usage there.
Hot Pie is worthless. He's also a companion, and we all know what that means.
And Hot Pie!
So, yeah, it's like warm apple pie, right?
Hot apple pie. Thank you very much.
Yes, that. And that card art, man.
Yeah, a rough.
So basically, Hot Pie is useless, and I maintain that the designers hit a thematic home run by making this card also useless.
I think they also really doubled down at the flavor text.
Exactly.
By midday, yeah. Hot Pie had begun to complain.
Exactly. So basically, if you choose to include him in a deck, you're gonna bitch about drawing this card. He's horrible. He's a thematic home run because nobody plays him.
I guess the thing that I would argue against, though, is the fact that
No, don't do that.
I'm sorry. This is what we do, man. The fact that he is in fact a companion himself means by putting him on the table, you have automatically given him purpose. That can be used immediately, in fact.
Not if you have 0 gold left and you don't have Rick and Stark in hand.
But, I mean, you could still
You
kneel.
Just named one situation where it works.
Or Viserys.
There's 2. You're arguing against yourself.
No, I'm just saying that, like, no, I'm saying that, like, this guy literally sees no play and is therefore fulfilling his purpose of just being a plot point and a completely ineffectual character. This dude has no icons and is only used to reduce your low cost or even high cost if you're really, like, playing that way, uniques by 1. he is horrendous. And I love the fact that they made this card horrendous.
I feel like I have new appreciation for this card.
Brian's like, going to include it in every deck.
You're being so mean to it that I love it now.
Okay, please play Hot Pie.
I think what's important to note about this is that after three starts,
and a Hot Pie is also my ass.
Sansa.
Yeah, dude, he doesn't know. Right? He doesn't know things.
Dude, Hot Pie is also an ass. Look at that mount he's riding.
That donkey's adorable.
Dude, this card is garbage, and Hot Pie is a stupid character that didn't need to be there. Hot Pie is dead weight, and this guy is 2 gold that you don't fucking care about.
I feel like he has too much versatility to call it a completely useless card.
I see you crossing your fingers.
No. Will, how many decks have you seen that play Hot Pie? Zero.
Since the start of the year, none.
Zero. This guy is garb.
He's an too good. Agreement among the meta community. He's too good. Hot Pie. Are you playing Sans Hot Pie? Okay, me too. We can play.
Guys, I'm sensing some dissension here. Maybe we should just get rid of Hot Pie.
Except you can't, because it only does ally cards in second
edition. Damn it!
Except you could just use Old Nan from first edition and make him a refugee and then bomb 2 characters.
I don't know how you're getting first edition cards.
Me neither.
But... You know what? I'm making an executive decision at this
point. Hot Pie is terrible.
Thank you for ruining this for everyone, Luke.
I told you it was going to be the punchline.
Point from everyone.
Wait, I told you that this wasn't about the actual segment. I told you that this was about the punchline.
Will, I would actually appreciate it if rather than everyone losing a half point, that Luke instead choose one opponent, and both he and that opponent will lose a half point.
That's pretty good.
Motion carried.
It's not me.
And then I would, I would move to amend the previous motion.
Denied.
Nobody's going to second that? Okay, thank you. I would move to also say that I reduce somebody else's point total by 1.
So angry.
We can just say that I lose this game, which is also fine.
how about I motion that we unfortunately
move
on.
That was fantastic.
That was good. We're going to very briefly.
You and Hot Pie just need to get it over with here.
Yeah,
Luke.
This is real upsetting.
We're going to very briefly attempt our favorite segment and listeners' least favorite. We are going to bring it around to props and or slops. This is a special bit of our show where we prop and slop things. Go figure. You know, normally I figure this is the sort of thing that Brian would really love to go on and on with, but unfortunately... I'm going to have to limit folks, I think, to one prop or slop this week. Promise we'll have you on another time when we can devote more time to it. I'm going to go ahead and prop this episode to begin with, because I think this was a brilliant idea to quit coming up with content of our own and instead steal good ideas from other places, and even better, steal their hosts to import the good ideas here.
Now you're becoming a true professional.
Yes.
I'll take a second. I'm probably super late to the game here because I'm pretty sure it's got like four seasons, but I just tried Drunk History this last weekend. And it is amazing. Like, the premise is great, and the presentation is exactly what you'd want it to be. Have you guys seen Drunk History?
I've watched
just a few episodes.
Yeah.
Okay. I watched the one with Charlie Day as the founding Pinkerton, and it was amazing.
I've not seen that.
So is this just literally where I give props to something in my life, or
slop something?
If you or prefer. Slop.
I'm gonna
you know, if you're just like, man, really slop that asshole that cut me off on the road the other day. You could.
Oh boy, I would want to do that, but I have a prop that I'd like to provide. I've been rewatching Game of Thrones, so I'm going to keep it a little on topic here. I would like to give props to the writers of the television show.
Ooh.
For
controversial. You're diverting. The only one.
Hold your hot pie. Hold your... You hang on now. I would like to give props to the writers of the show for the diversion they chose to take in season 2, in which they had Tywin interacting with Arya for a very long episode arc. That was, because that's different from the books. Am I remembering correctly?
Yeah, Roose was the one who interacted with Arya.
Yeah, she's with Roose.
With Roose before.
The interactions between Tywin and Arya in the show are phenomenal, which is definitely a reflection, perhaps less on the writing and more on those two actors doing an incredible job with the content they were given. Not to say it was badly written, just that I really enjoyed it. So, I know a lot of people rag on the show. There are some key differences between them. I think they're doing a good job with the show. I think that was a really, really great usage of working with the characters that they had developed and taking a chance and diverting away from the established story. So props to the writers for that particular character arc.
I'm going to prop Cardboard of the Rings, because it has been an institution in my life for the past, like, I don't know, 6 months or so, when I really started playing the game a lot. And I'm sad to see this current iteration go by the wayside, but I know that all y'all be around, so props to that as well, and props to the remaining crew who are going to keep it going.
Agreed.
Well, I know Will has probably not told you yet, but we're just taking over this show at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I was looking for the right moment to break that news.
Yeah,
and,
we've got a big old hot pie to drop on you later.
Whatever. I'm gonna go take a big Sean and Brian later.
Take a picture.
I cannot wait to meet y'all at Gen Con. Over.
That does not put us in the danger zone. I don't know what does.
Well, all I know is that I owe both of you a drink.
I will take it.
So true.
I'll take Brian's drink.
Sean will probably drink it for me. I'm not much of a drinker, so.
All right.
You can buy me a
hot. Hang on. Before we officially DZ here, is this me being self-important, or has the latest streak of Danger Zone started since the last time I was on?
Maybe that might be noises. About the time we brought it back.
Does
that mean we have I've to been end noticing it after it. The show?
No, I just think that closes another chapter of the Y-Play.
Oh no! No, I killed it.